happy by when we read wrinkles, people think of wrinkles in the face. But yeah, that's what it is. I hope that the company, Avon, which is my company, when they talk to me, I hope they're not thinking that wrinkles, lipids means they will get wrinkles in the face. Actually, we make wrinkles, so they will not like that. So, good morning. Sorry, forgot to say good morning. The motivation of this talk is really broader than that, just the study of this kind of object. But basically, we like to understand what is the relationship between geometry and mechanics, and especially in the matter when you have slender objects as membrane or polymer, geometry becomes very important, especially 2D membranes in 3D space, such as a piece of paper or an elastic membrane, a car, whatever, all shells. Also, as you will see throughout the talk, we'll be able also to ask questions such as, what is the implications of this transition into packaging biological materials? And now, because now, I mean, with the biotech booming, people will start trying to see how can we put things together in smaller spaces for gene delivery, or for the delivery, or for other things. And also, more intellectually, and more esoteric term, there is still a lack in understanding how the disorder in a fluid membrane, or any membrane actually, that would be fluid in the membrane, would give us a rich behavior in university classes, just as like a critical phenomenon. Although we don't know if it's belong to any critical phenomena. Disclaimer one. A lot of people make, it's legitimate sometimes to mix between the word wrinkling and crumpling, but in the realm of liquid membranes, such as lipid membranes, where the temperature is important, crumpling corresponds to the high temperature phase, where the local normals, if you imagine the membrane is defined by normals all over the surface, they fluctuate in time and space, so there's no long range correlation. Actually, there is, you can calculate it dies exponentially with space. The wrinkling, just like with cloth, actually freezes in space and time, and the normals are very correlated, as you can see.
So you don't wrinkle, you don't crumple paper, you wrinkle it down in this terminology?
That's a second disclaimer that can be used in the future. So here's the definition of my wrinklesomes. They are liposomes, but I would read the vesicles, not really particularly liposomes. They can make lipids, so these are my lipids. They undergo spontaneous wrinkling transition. Wrinkling means they become wrinkled, they become really rough, without the action of an external force, not from within. I mean, not from within, because the force we're going to have is from within due to some stuff I'm going to talk about. Okay, so first question we ask when we hear about membranes and about surfaces, if you have a membrane of size L, of thickness H, and how does it behave when it's confined to a smaller volume than its spatial dimensions? Just like when you crumple a piece of paper in your hands. Is there a relationship between the size of the cloth, the volume, and the size of the piece of paper? When I say paper, elastic sheet, could be a fluid membrane, it could be a graphite oxide membrane, it could be anything. Something that's large and very thin.
What is the definition of size here?
As I said, linear size.
Linear size.
And then you would ask yourself, what's the landscape of the surface dimension? How does it look like? What is the correlation in space between every position in the membrane? And those questions are going to try to answer them throughout the talk. And this problem is very similar, intellectually speaking, to the Plato problem. This is the volume confining problem, and the Plato problem is surface confining. So you confine your soap film on the surface, this you confine your ball into a volume. But it's a little bit more difficult than that. So we can do a very simple scaling. We know that the volume of sheet of size L. When I say size, okay, linear size L, and the thickness H, the volume is HL squared. If you make the ball out of the same membrane, and if it's spherical, then the volume goes like RQ, and the mass goes like RQ. This is, we weigh them, the mass will be the same, then R goes like L 2 third, H 1 third. But if you do the experiments, so this is fine, like every, I mean, there's nothing special about this, it's really very trivial, but I will show you that this is not true. Actually, not me, actually, NASA did it some time ago, and I forgot to mention, Gomez did that, and Weiss in his thesis did that, and I also tried that. Actually, the scaling around, you can't do it all magnitude, because then you end up having like a big, huge panel, it's not easy to crumple it, but basically it tells you that it's not a 2/3, it's a 0.8. Actually, I did it several times with aluminum foil, with mylar, with paper, with anything. I tried many nights, sleepless nights, trying to do it again. I mean, it's 0.8, 0.81, 0.79, but it's 0.8.
Oh, you did the crumpling, not the grad student.
Oh yeah, I do crumpling. A lot of paper mouth. It's 0.8, it's not 2/3. 2/3 is different than 0.8. So, but it's very similar to, I mean, people who know 2D polymers, this is really the floor experience of 2D polymers. Yes?
It's scaling, I mean, would you really believe that, scaling it, you first wrote down?
Tom Whittingham didn't believe it too, but this is what you, I mean, I'm not saying what I believe it, why wouldn't you believe it?
Well, the...
You would tell me the lack of
I wouldn't imagine H would have been that important.
H?
I couldn't, yeah, I wouldn't imagine R would scale with H. I mean, H is basically zero, I mean, so it's simplified.
Well, there's a recent paper.
I have two pieces of paper that are one that's twice as thick as the other, and I crunch them together. I can't imagine that the radius changed very much.
Didn't. This aluminum, which is 0.2.
No, I agree with that. That's
which
that
is point
the scaling.
It's 50 micron, and paper 150 micron.
That's your original scaling argument. I'm surprised.
Yes.
H1/3.
H1 is wrong, right?
No, you're saying that you don't even expect it to be H1/3.
I wouldn't have guessed the H1.
Yeah. The 1/3 is two.
Yeah, but still. Anyway.
It went to 2/3, right? Anyway, this is just to say that there was a paper recently, like a year ago, where there was they did some statistics on crushed paper, and they found that thickness is not important. Weakly important. I can't say it's not, I mean, they showed that the variation with thickness was really, really weak.
Yeah.
But there was a variation. True. It was not 1/3, it was like they did statistics and they fitting parameter with the thickness, and the thickness was going really very slowly with the fitting parameter. So why is that 2D polymers? This slide is really not important, but basically if you do the Landau-Ginzburg free energy, this is just all the possible terms that conserve symmetry plus self-avoidance if you balance these two guys. And this is what I'm saying here, it's not, it's somewhat important because recently, like 2 months ago, Gomper wrote a Nature Materials paper where he showed that he found the same scaling for an elastic sheet, the 0.8. He couldn't check the thickness because he was using MDs, and MDs they didn't have thicknesses, they have zero thicknesses. But but this is just telling you that this surprising, a lot of people said that there's no inner decays when they said I can't believe the scaling where you have like one decade. But. So there was some effort on.
Oh, wait, the last one is the fluorine happens to get 0.8.
Oops, sorry.
So
which one?
What is the minus?
This one?
Yeah. 0.8?
Yes.
Okay.
That's a fluorine in
this fluorine.
Yeah, 2D in 3D. Sorry, can I make a comment? I mean, there's a problem with your balancing that was noted by Poisson. If you actually look at the stability of this point, it's unstable.
That's why people never believed it. And yeah, the Fleury exponent in for polymer 3D, 3/5, I mean, this is, there's no way of getting this from systematic theory.
No, because his balancing was wrong. But why it worked? Because the effect, like say, thermal fluctuations were canceled out automatically. So what was important was canceled out anyway.
Yeah.
So couldn't. I mean,
that was shown by Clouzot in the '70s.
Yeah, Clouzot was too difficult for me to read.
Yeah.
So
mm-hmm.
It's too mathematical. Anyway, two guys in the '90s tried to look at because in the early '90s, Kardar, Nelson, Abraham, and the groups, I don't know, there's so many names, tried to find this coupling transition. Actually, they were inspired by polymers, and they were thinking of finding a phase where things become very fluctuating in time and space, and they were trying to use polymer science in 2D, for 2D polymer in 3D. But then two people, the late Tanaka and Sazadzinski, I always write his name wrong, they use geomembranes, very thin membranes, atomic thick, but they're very rigid, and they put them in NaOH, it's very bad solvent, so they tend to coil.
What's
and
a geomembrane?
Graphite oxide. I didn't think it was important to say it's a graphite oxide. So it's a graphite, basically you take a graphite sheet, and you exfoliate with the acids, H2SO4, like the very nasty experiments, and you get very thin. This is TM picture, so you can imagine this like a micron or 2 micron size. And the thickness, you can see, it's really unimolecular. I mean, one atom thick membranes. And they said you can see there's some ridges and stuff like that, which is reminiscent of some kind of wrinkling. And they did x-rays, and they found that the structure factor goes like q to the minus 2/4. It's not working. And Zazinski, like 2 years later, he did the phase fracture, and he thought, I don't see any crumpling, I see flat phases. Flat. And then he did S of q, and found q goes like minus 2 here, 2.5, too much coffee. He said, I can't say what it is. I can't say it's a. And then he decided to say, okay, I don't have enough decades. I don't have enough points. I can't fit anything here. Like Wigner said, I can fit an elephant. If you give me more parameter, I can make him tail wiggle. The problem with these pictures here, with the phase fracture, you might, actually that's what happened in the phase fracture, you break the sample through all the flat phases anyway. Like if you look at a piece of paper with a crumpler, there's a lot of flat pieces. So maybe he's missing really the crump. I mean, maybe the experiment is flawed. The way he's looking at the data is flawed. So as I said, according to Tanaka, the geomembranes showed the crumpler transition. Actually, they changed the solvent. They changed the pH of the solvent, and they observed the exponent of the Q changed. But according to Zazinski, I have no idea what his email is. His email is gorilla at UCSB. I don't know why. Sure, right?
Look at him.
What?
Look at him.
Yeah, that's why he put gorilla in. You know that, Kaylee. And I think it's because they might have fractured the membrane in along the flat sides. But he said, maybe the geomembranes are too stiff. Actually, yeah, they are like 100 times stiffer than the big membrane, so they're very hard for them to bend. But that's not true, because the bending goes like h cubed, and h very small, so they should bend. Because, as you know, according to Rayleigh 100 years ago, yes?
I'm a little bit confused. You said that there is crumpling and wrinkling, and we should distinguish them.
No, it's interchangeably. You can use them interchangeably.
So now we're talking about crumpling or wrinkling. Is this frozen state or is it equilibrium state? What was done in the experiment?
They took the German brains, they're flat, put them on solvent, they wrong.
So that's frozen.
They call them.
You didn't fluctuate.
No.
Okay.
No, actually they don't fluctuate. That's what happens when they wrinkle, when they crumple, German brains or lipid membranes don't fluctuate. It's a frozen state. So okay, let's call them wrinkled. But I said, if I say crumpling, in one of my phase diagrams, I was specifically differentiate between crumbling and wrinkling. But so far, these guys look at them and they do S, and they don't fluctuate. So, if you look at the, at the piece of paper wrinkled, you see these faces here, and separated by these very small regions of measure almost zero. If you don't, this piece was cropped really very badly, it's 20 times or something, to see this nice facets, triangles. But normally it's like you have, the energy is condensed in small regions of size zero. And this like make the slices beautiful. This is the bottom of a pool. And the energy is also, in this case, the electromagnetic energy is focused into these regions. So we get the similarity. This is not important for the talk anyway, so I just make it look good. And why I'm talking here, because in the real crumpling, there is an important object we call the conical singularity, which was shown to be important. I'm going to go a little bit faster. So if you look at the crumpled elastic sheet that I showed you, you can imagine that this elastic, that the surface is self-affine. You can see if it's self-affine or not. So what you do, you look at you do profilometry and see how the height. If a surface is self-affine, then the height will go like lambda to the h, z of this function, and h is a Hertz exponent. It tells you that the surface is self-similar actually. To do that, you have to measure the height-height correlation function. Should go like the distance, the spatial distance to the Hertz exponents. And if you do power spectrum, you should. That's what you get experimentally, because I do experiments. You get experimentally that power spectrum versus the basic versus scale goes like minus 1 plus 2h, which is the, you can say for univalued function, it's just like the roughness exponent, but not always. So this was done by Stefan Roux in 96, and then by Cadroli in 2005, and they found that this Hertz exponent of crumpled elastic sheet could be, some people use mylar, sometimes use paper, it's 0.77, 0.75.
If it's crumpled, you're using the distance on the base plane to measure, to determine distances, but presumably that would bear rather poor relation to the distance on the sheet itself.
You mean you have to, by using the projected surface?
On the sheet rather than on the base plane.
Yes. This is distance on the sheet. It's like it's in the Monge, I mean, I'm not talking about the projected surface, but along the surface. Mm-hmm. Actually, that's what you get experimentally.
But what occurs in these formulas is the distance along the on the base plane.
No, this is on the surface. Because you can define every time you hit a vector tangent, you can define your vector. Yes, David?
I guess I have trouble with this analogy. I mean, what are the criteria that you create a crumpled sheet? Because if Superman did it, it'd be diamond. So how much do you crush it, and then how much do you open it out? And
well,
why is it important to lipid membrane? Because it's not the same process.
Yes, it's not the same process. That was force crumpling. This the lipid membrane. It's I can show you. It's not force crumpling. Just just miscibility due to something else. I don't want to jump now to conclusion because
I wish you would.
Yeah. Well, if Superman man does a crumpling versus me, there would be a shift in the not in the power law, but in the he would be like here, I would be here,
okay.
But it would be like this, well, hopefully.
But the bilayer, you know, I only know about the bilayer.
Well, in the case of the bilayer, it's more tricky because they have different compressibility, they have different mechanical parameters.
Yes,
I'm coming.
Okay, I'll relax. I'll chill there.
So I'm gonna skip this. Okay, here's the work by Gomper, and he found that using the same argument as Mehran and Abraham, Fade Abraham. Where he took a disk of an elastic membrane and did MD simulations, and he crushed it, and he found that his membrane goes like 0.874. And he wrote the Nature Materials recently about that. So the importance is that the 87 is indeed due to self-avoidance. It means when you take an elastic membrane, the occurrence of those singular points is what dictate the geometry. So, but for lipid membranes is another story. Actually, it's even better because you can span you can span more behavior than this. So we use DC89PC, I'm not gonna spell it out. You know, this lipid is always, but it's a colline. And this PC is chiral, so at low temperature, they are inclined. They make bilayer like this. At high temperature, I'm going to show you more pictures. But at high temperature, they are basically perpendicular to this line here. But at low temperature, they become inclined because of the chirality. So when you put the temperature below some melting temperature, which is 37 degrees, they make tubules. They make ribbons. I'm going to show you that. So we prepare them following standard methods, evaporate this solvent, so we clean them with methanol and chloroform, and then we leave the liquid film, and then we put the liquids in hot water at 70 degrees to swell them at half the temperature, and then brought them back to the temperature, and then they form ribbons. It means we UV them at a low temperature so that there's no fluctuations. So we'll be sure that those triple bonds here would be polymers. So we create a polymer network, and then we reheat them back and we cool them down. These lipids were first done, first actually synthesized by the Navy guys, Schnur, Spector, Schoen, Slinger, Jaeger, and then Ben Simon was the one who found out that by using UV, you end up having some of this rapid transition. So these are my UVs, how we do that. So if you take your lipids, at low temperature, they make ribbons. They make ribbons because of the chirality. They are chiral, and they in the C-star symmetric phase. And if you cool them down in the bulk, they have to make ribbons because of the chirality at the molecular scale. And if you put them up, they make normal vesicles, nice spheres. Now, this is the bilayer, the C star. This is like around 45 degrees, 54, if I remember. And if you UV them, and then you cool them up, you heat them up, they become vesicles. If you cool them, they wrinkle. And if you heat them up again, they will come back spheres. And you cannot come back to here anymore after you polymerize. You would stay here. So now we have a system that can wrinkle without external force. But the force now is due to this instability from a sphere to ribbon. There's still a debate actually. What's this? I think to solve this problem is very hard to solve, genetically. But this problem would be solved if this problem is solved. This problem is not already solved. Actually, I talked to Fred McIntosh, who worked on this with Schillinger and those guys, and they they still don't know how to really reproduce this data.
Is a wrinkled vesicle topologically the same? If you make the sphere,
the spheres, it becomes
and
spheres.
Then you cool it, so then it wants
wrinkles.
To. The chirality wants to make the ribbons, but it's frustrated because it's in a sphere.
It's broken, because the chirality is broken, yes.
That's why. It
yes, and it comes back to the sphere.
Oh, it wrinkles because it wants to do this phase transition, but it can't because it
yes.
It's
yes.
tied down into a
exactly.
Sphere.
Basically, I kill the chiral symmetry at micro level. That because from micro level, you have this macroscopic behavior, like larger scales, which is like 100 micron here, then you can do the same thing. Basically, you can disturb that chirality, and that chirality gives you this kind of behavior. That's what's happening.
But you polymerize too, right?
Yes.
So you've lost the diacetylene bonds in some of the lipids. Do you know how many you've lost today? Because they don't all polymerize.
No.
It's a linear polymer going around a surface.
Yes.
Okay.
I will show that later with the neutrons.
What happens to the volume inside the sphere? I mean, if it wrinkles,
it's pushed out.
Pushed out.
Actually, I'm saying that as a drug delivery system.
So when you swell it back again, when you heat it up again, do you regain the same shape and size?
Yes.
The size?
Yes.
So?
Yes. Well.
But, you know, you have things that change.
Up to lipids hardly go away because they like to be in a very small curvature than smoker, so they stay on the surface. Something else, I don't know what's been left. The polymer itself is hydrophobic. To our resolution, they don't lose much. They might lose much. They might lose something. Maybe because it's really violent when they push things up. Maybe they can push some lipids. They go in tinier.
We might pour something.
It's
possible.
Permeable.
Yeah, it's a permeable surface.
To a certain extent, but we didn't measure that. Actually, we're doing it right now. This is a video of how things work. This is at high temperature, and then I cool it down. And then when I cool it down below the melting temperature, I got this behavior. And everybody collapses.
So it has to be permeable, you have to squeeze
it. No, it breaks.
Oh, it breaks.
Yeah, you have topology change, it breaks because it becomes flat, locally flat. You change it from the sphere, it's not like a wrinkled surface. You can't wrinkle a sphere if you don't break it.
So how does it go back again then?
What?
So what? But it can still go back?
Yes, because lipids self-assemble again.
Oh, I see.
That's how you make them. You make them from a lipid.
Oh,
as
I see. I see.
You make them from a film that's flat locally, and even globally.
Okay.
And then they become spheres. You break them and they crumble. They just they throw out everything. And then when you heat them up, they gain. I didn't have a video, but it takes a long time.
This happens with just regular breaking states. You know, regular phosphatidylcholine vesicles will just go through the transition.
DMPCs or?
Yeah, and just flatten out like this. And then they might re-swell again. Depends what the film is a bit like. If you make individual vesicles, and you know, I did it with the micropipette, we can get vesicles to go through a transition and then come back again. It stays very good together, but they will crumple in a solid bed.
They crumple as much as this?
Yeah.
I mean, the diameter goes to.
Well, the crumple, you know, the membrane crumples. In fact, they've even got some T beta prime fed vesicles that jet because they do lose the surface condenses in this. The normal is angled, so the projected area is smaller, and they lose volume.
So they are inclined.
Yeah, in the T beta prime fed, it's the first solid fed is underneath the L alpha fed.
So how much lipids do you have? So it's single vesicles.
Single vesicles. And they go through this transition, they lose area.
But this is not a pivot up prime.
Well, no, I know it isn't, but I'm just saying, in regular PCs, we see this kind of stuff.
What's the reason?
They go through a transition, the projected area is now 25 degrees.
Because the lipids are inclined?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's the same reason here.
Yeah.
But this reason is not really due to, I mean, the ribbons are due to the chirality, but the wrinkling is due to the staggered, you broke the ribbon chirality.
Yeah. Okay.
So we did, what is that? Did the transition temperature change?
It's for said DMPC.
Yeah, it's only 23 degrees.
24 degrees, and the P-beta to prime transition is turned about 11. And between 11 and 25, you get this ripple phase.
Oh, it's
yeah.
A ripple phase.
Yeah, it's a pre-transition before you get into the L-beta phase. And there is a same kind of thing. There's a volume change because there's an area change. The area condenses through a transition. And so
because I looked at the MPC in 2 photon, the actual facets.
You
I didn't see.
Look at
this.
So we did look at the temperature. I mean, we could do temperature, the transition temperature with ESC, but for the reason that if you do the ESC, you have to use a lot of lipids, and then you have to go through different phases. We don't know if it's going to be a Langmuir phase or something. So I prefer to do it on single decibels. So we do that by looking at the fluorescence emission of this molecule called Bordan, which emits different wavelength when it's packed or unpacked. When the membrane go to a packed, for example, this guy, it goes in 540. If it's in the gel phase, it emits in the 450. So blue or green, so we can know that you are in the full solid phase when the liquid goes on the phase. And that's how it works. So we measure this emission intensity, and the emission density shifts to the right. For example, if you have a liquid crystalline adsorbed phase, if you are a gel phase, it shifts to the 450. So we can measure basically the temperature change just by using the vitamin one basically at a time. And fair enough, people did DSCs, and we found exactly at 37 degrees, we have change in the GP from the disordered phase to the highly ordered phase, unpolymerized. If you polymerize, however, the transition disappears from 37. There's nothing 37 until very low temperatures, which is like around 26, 25, 24. So as I said, the membrane basically tried to go to the Rubin phase, and then didn't find the lower energy. It tried fighting the geometry until it reaches some temperature and has to collapse and collapse into the wrinkle phase. So we would measure this transient temperature versus polymerization. But the problem is we found out that the transient temperature depends on the vesicle size. When the vesicle size go up, the temperature goes up, but not very consistently. So we didn't want to. Look at the dependence. This is just how it looks like when you go from 55 to 36. You have this ribbon formation, like rods. If you polymerize for 10 seconds or 20 seconds, you have the folding. Actually, that's what happens. If you go for high polymerization, you have a compaction. So basically, we can probe different topologies by putting more and more polymer on the surface. As I'm going to show you, I don't have enough time, so I'm going to skip this. Okay, this is what I'm talking about before about compound wrinkled. This is many people did this kind of phase diagram, they found the same thing. Basically, this is the disorder of this temperature. Suppose we are in this phase here, so you have to span a long period before you hit the spin glass, which is the wrinkled phase. That's what I meant by wrinkled, crumpled. Crumpled is really paramagnetic phase into the spin glass.
What's the disorder?
What's the question?
What's the parameter of
the
disorder?
Oh, it's here. It's this guy here.
Physically, which is?
The polymer chain. That's why it's coupled to this kind of vector. Basically, you put like weak links through the membrane. That's where the membrane is weakest, and that's what it breaks down. Although it's not even, I don't think that's the mechanism. Like, the mechanism had to do with characters. It's not really just putting, that's why what Radzihovsky tried to do, they put like grand boundaries on the surface, and it's so badly, but not, that's not the fit. So, so could we, I forgot to, so since we have this prediction, can we go from a flat phase, which is like when the membrane is all flat with some given exponent, to the wrinkled phase, and can we see like different phases just using experiments? So this is what we did. So basically we did the same profilometry, and we tried to look whether we can find something like this versus the landscape. If you do membranes, you know the fundamental membrane, power spectrum looks like 1/q^4. And if you put this order, like for example, the Nelson Radzihovsky, they put this order in the metric. They draw a membrane, and they say the membrane lives on a matrix, and the matrix is disordered by some Swinton's curvatures. They put some disorder, Gaussian disorder. And they found that eta prime depends on disorder, but linearly. Fine. So can we find that? Well, we did the experiment. This is P of K. We did AFM experiments, and we get the power spectrum, and we have, it varies from eta equals 3 to 2. From As we speculate, this is the folded phase. This is the crumpled phase, or the intermediate crumpled phase, or the intermediate wrinkled phase, because it looks like an elastic sheet. And this is the compact phase, or really wrinkled roughened phase, because Nelson called it roughened phase. So in what following tradition called roughened compact phase, like in the paper. But what happens if you vary continuously the polymerization? How does it behave? Does it go nearly down, or does it stay constant? What happens? Surprisingly, it does this. For low polymerization, it's constant around 2.8 or 2.93, say 3, because within given the error in experiments and preparing, a lot of errors in the experiments. And then it drops down at some critical polarization. Actually, I don't want to speculate anything. I mean, I don't want to speculate something stupid, but it's like three, it's like the percolation, I mean, 0.3. It's like similar. I don't know. Actually, percolation is here. Looks like the same thing. The 2.5 is similar to the elastic sheet given by other people. And we can define the critical polarization at which the Fraunhofer exponent is constant. Just like if you took it backward, this looks like a supercritical transition. Where I think what order parameter is my eta, I don't know how to write down the parameter, which is an exponent, which goes down, which goes up like a supercritical instability. So can we verify this using other methods? Like everybody tried to verify this using two different methods. So we did neutral scattering to get the fractal dimension. That's what Jamal is asking about the projected area of the area. So you need to know the fractal dimension of the surface to be to the integration on the surface, right? D to the df, which is the fractal dimension. You can get that only by the neutral scattering, actually. So we did neutral scattering at the Argonne National Lab with a Q range, respectable range, 0.04 to 1. We cannot do X-ray or normal light because these guys, we can damage, we can polarize the lipids while they are being looked at. So we need only neutron. We cannot do X-rays or light. We can do only neutron or AFM. So we did the same thing. So we hydrate the lipid into DTO, and we UV them with 1 micron, and we put them in 1 millimeter thick quartz vials, like they do them all the time. So we use the what they call powder. It means we're not looking at the lamellar sheet. We're looking at the disordered, we're looking at the isotropic phase, means everything is fluctuating, so we're looking at the isotropic structure factor as a function of space in general. So if you look at the intensity versus the scale, If you don't reheat them, they look like this, which is this is zero. This is polymerization. This is like 20%, 30%. There's no change if you don't reheat them. If you make tubules, polymerize them, and look at them with neutron, nothing changes. So they look into, and the fact dimension here is like -3, which is like for tube. But if you heat them up, they keep the same shape, but you have a peak here, which corresponds to the bilayer thickness, so it's fine. So we can verify that our data is nice, there's no problem, so we don't see anything. However, if you go beyond, that is called the percolation limits, and you cool them back, you heat them up to get the vesicles, these guys don't do it anymore. We're talking, this is 2 and 4 seconds. I mean, they're gone beyond, they're beyond hope, they are locked. Actually, we waited for like 8 hours. They didn't get back. These guys came back to fluctuation membrane. This is a signature. DMPC would do this too. DPPC would do this. They have the same. It's like it's a signature for fluctuating membranes. So if now we do our systematic study for polymerization versus IF cubers polymerization, and we vary this, we find out that our IFQ is a power law in the whole region, actually. Even a high polymerization. However, in high polymerization, only this part is powerful. And this one is a bent. It's not a power law anymore. So, first of all, let's look at the behavior of the fractal dimension. And it's consistent to a certain extent. It's not as neat as the IFM, but it goes like to its constant around 2.55, and then at the same polarization, it goes down to fractal dimension 2.4. Now, this is not really exciting. What's exciting is this. It doesn't look very well. This is there are here. Really a good fit. It's like 0.999, almost one. So if I fit those data, these guys here, oops. If I fit those guys, to power doesn't work, but it fits very well to a log normal, which is 1 over Q. This is variance, and this is log of Q. Q is the distance. And why this works? Why it fits best? Well, actually, it was shown in a lecture. It's never been published, but it was done by actually Gomper did his Maddox and Kudroli in mixed membrane, where Witten gave a talk and he said that his crumpling due to the splitting of a line. If you go to the book by Feller, probability, and you take what's the probability distribution of this guys here, breaking it, but you take a line and break it into 1/3, 2/3, just because you can be able to make random. 1/3, and then you make 1/3 into 1/3, 2/3, make 2/3, 1/3, 2/3, and do it at infinitum, but k times, then every one of these guys has a length L. These guys are 2^k fragment, and every one of them is L times either 1/3 or 2/3. And pick one. 1/3, 2/3 is here, then is it 1/3 of 1/3 or 1/3 of 2/3, and then over what 2/3 of 1/3? It's very confusing. And then the last one will be the product of these guys. The case. So if you take the this guy as a product of the random numbers, the log is the sum of log of the random numbers. So the sum of random numbers, then the product distribution is Gaussian. But the Gaussian is the log. So this, if you know about the Richardson cascade in turbulence, he said big wheels give small wheels give smaller wheels until viscosity. Basically, the very famous Kolmogorov cascade in turbulence, where you have big wheels, they become smaller, smaller, smaller to viscosity. That's a Kolmogorov 5/3. So, actually, it's fine because it's funny because it looks like the same cascade. It's not the same exponent, but it's the same kind of stuff because you have a cascade of energy from big scale to small scale. But that's not what happened, actually. It's not this way. If you look at the dynamics now, so we took basically here means you have a big fall that breaks into small faults until thickness. From a viscosity to thickness. Well, it doesn't look that way. Well, of course it doesn't look that way, but let's do some quantitative analysis. And so we took a membrane and we tagged it with red nylon. Not too much, so we need to have the mechanical properties always the same. And we look at the dynamics, the perimeter, not the diameter, but we look at the perimeter size and we let it shrink and see what happens. So there's two regimes for like 3 seconds. It's very slow, and then bump, goes down faster. After like some time, delta T we call crossover from the first regime to second regime. If you do it again for hypermobilization, you have again a slow regime and then bump more regime. And you can see the time is going smaller. If you do it again, if I go beyond percolation limit, as you remember, the critical hypermobilization, these guys disappear, becomes flatline. Bump, goes straight. So if I plot this delay time, the crossover time versus hypermobilization, goes like 0.6. I have like 4 points, but I really didn't care about having a lot of points in here because I don't see what's kind of theory, but what's saying is because at 35 is zero, so it cannot fit the zero with these guys. So that's why I didn't put the zero here. You can't fit the zero in these numbers. Basically, the delay times decreases with the polymerization through the power. If someone has an idea, fine. I'm just saying that it's not. So this behavior tells you that you have smaller faults appearing at smaller scale, and then you have catastrophe happening at bigger scale. Basically, because it's due to the fact that I'm dealing with the cascade of the buckling. It's like a condensation of energy, basically condensation of energy, like you condense energy in a piece of paper, and you have this single point where the energy is condensed. Turbulence also, when you condense too much energy into the flow, you have whirls and you have the hairpins, and everyone else flow is cool, no problem. So there's an analogy between big falls, small falls, and big whirls, small whirls. But in this case, we don't have the same thing. Because in our scenario, shrinkage is slow, and then you have catastrophe. This means we have the buckling is rather local, and if you understand that, because if you remember the tubular geometry, it was due to some chiral symmetry. If you break the chiral symmetry, you break it at the single molecule level. So you make those polymers, and you break this C-star configuration, and then it happens on a small scale. And then when it becomes spread out at a given correlation length, then it breaks down. And fair enough, we did the, I talked to Fred McIntyre, I told him I might have rafts, I might have islands of polymers, I might have stars. He said, no, I think we have this in the model. So I said, let's do neutron. What we did, we take our lipids, we did the same thing, but what we did now, we put them in chloroform. So we condensed all the lipids, we left out with reddish polymer. That's it, and we did neutrons. It looks horrible because we don't have enough stuff. I mean, we have so much polymer, we get like less than ppms, like ppb, I guess. So what's interesting, when I increase the polymerization, this line here is minus one. It means, I'm stretching a little bit, it means it's reminiscent of 1D polymer on the surface. But if you go to higher polarization, you have a peak, which means you have some kind of structure. That's why you have this lock-in. That's why at very high polarization, the membranes are locked and they don't come back anymore. So there was a Radyovsky and Nelson tried to explain the buckliness of the body using grain boundaries. So they took example phase and they put the grain boundary at 20 degrees between fives and sevens. And they said, if I leave this relaxed, they did really very tour de force calculations, but they found that we have this ridge appears. But I don't think so, that's not what happened. This really had to do with the frustration of the chirality at smaller scales. It's not really a grand boundary induced. Maybe it's grand boundary, but it's really not. It's not like from sphere to crumple. It's really it's really a frustration of the tumor phase into the crumble phase. So a possible picture is you have your tubule and you polymerize a patch, or it could be a linear polymer actually. I didn't set up any sizes. And then when you, as you remember, if I don't heat up again two times, I would not have back my signature of lipid membranes, proton lipid membranes. So this polymer has to move around. Basically, the scenario is if this guy is polymerized in this configuration, in this curvature R1, then if you heat it up, he will move on the surface for some time. And then when you freeze it, he will forget that he was here. He's somewhere else. I think that's what gave I think what we should do is we should look at the model that explains the tubular geometry, and then disturb the chiral term, the C grad outer product N that gives you the chiral term, and multiply it by a random number, and then you get your tubular phase totally screwed up. I didn't see that done, but I think that's the way to do it. So we tried to do it for, as you asked me where the fluid goes, we did fluorescence inside, and at the compact phase, when you have a lot of polymerization, these guys go boom, it 3Ds everything out. If you do it slowly, if you polymerize just a little bit for 20 seconds, it gives me a cascade of delivery. It means you can deliver by small pulses. So the crumple elastic sheet, when people are doing elastic sheets, are really subclass of a bigger class where the disorder could be tuned. These transitions are not what people think as pure thermodynamical. Okay, the transition from the disorder gel phase to C-star symmetric phase where the lipids are inclined is thermodynamic, but this instability is purely mechanical. So by breaking the chiral symmetry, we might be able to see this kind of behavior. That's what I said. And thank you very much for your attention.